Hello, this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is Helen Jacey. She's a professional screenwriter, a lecturer, an author, and founder and CEO of She Done It Productions. She started her company in 2018 to provide opportunities across media for intersectional feminist work. Helen has an MA in screenwriting from the London Institute and a doctorate from the University of Arts, London. An expert in female characterisation, her first book, The Woman in the Story, was published in 2010 and has since become the international handbook for screenwriters creating female characters. Helen, thanks so much for joining us on Monocle Reads.
Oh, no, it's absolutely fantastic to be here. Thank you.
Now, I know that crime noir is one of your particular focuses, and I wonder if we could start just by describing the genre, but in the traditional way in which most people would recognise it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when you say noir, most people would think about 1940s noir, and that's the kind of noir I'm most familiar with. There is a kind of lots of revisions of noir going on and in recent decades. But 1940s noir is essentially a kind of dark, gritty portrayal in America, normally in a big city, of a dangerous world and a bleak sort of outlook on life. Normally there's a crime, a murder, and normally there's a torture protagonist, sometimes a kind of cynical, loner, slightly outsider male detective, you know, and there's also all the sort of female characters that are sort of circumvent him in one way or another. And usually he's entrapped by one, or, you know, sometimes there's a kind of good girl. Often there's a sense, you know, of a kind of chaotic world order and morality. So your male protagonist is very much a kind of on the side of law and order. He's a good guy. And sometimes it's like exploring that sort of male angst. Veterans were returning in a lot of noir films and finding their place. So I think it's really quite a kind of masculine genre. You know, it's driven by males, and female audiences probably can't really relate to the female characters that are in them.
Well, I think you're being very polite and not saying that it's blatantly sexist and racist.
Yes, they are. I mean, you know, these are the 40s, and the 40s were obsessed by conformity, and they were all products. All these films were filtered by, you know, the Hays Office, the Hollywood Motion Picture Production Code. And yes, so I am being polite, because they were completely obsessed by morality, and all these stories had to be filtered with a kind of, you know, the audience could not come away with any sense at all that crime or immorality was somehow being celebrated or rewarded by the narrative. So, you know, there was a very, you know, and they were absolutely obsessed with female behaviour, standards of behaviour, certainly sexual behaviour.
But you have subverted this. I mean, you've written your first book, excellent book, really gets us to look at that genre and others through the female gaze.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching loads of 40s movies, probably like everybody else, sitting in front of a crappy black and white TV. And then, you know, I was obsessed with romances, musicals and noir. And then I kind of grew up and sort of forgot about them, really. And I think I think one day, probably in 2008, I was picked up a Raymond Chandler. I was on a sort of summer holiday, by which time I was a kind of, you know, diehard feminist with a very critical eye. And I thought, wow, I haven't ever seen a 1940s female detective, you know, other than Golden Age heroines who are all amateur sleuths, you know, like Miss Marple and her ilk, who are usually kind of quite middle class. They do belong to society. They can be somewhat priggish, and certainly Golden Age novels really reflect through the female characters a certain respectability as well. So, you know, even if there's a female detective, female characters who somehow transgress, you know, society's codes, they're there and they're sort of looked at quite badly as well. So I thought, I've never seen a feminist detective, and I've never seen one that really, you know, there's something about the noir world which is so appealing, the drama, the high stakes, murders, complex plots. But wouldn't it be great to actually enter the world through a female gaze and a feminist gaze with a female character who basically is everything that the 40s would hate. That's how I created Elvira.
Well, tell us about Elvira and your books about her.
Well, Elvira is basically, you know, like many detectives, a born outsider, but I wanted to really push her to the edge. I didn't want her to be gentle. I really wanted her to be, you know, someone who totally spins the genre on its head. So therefore, I made her kind of very undesirable in terms of 40s standards. So she's an orphan, she's a illegitimate. She did her stint in reform school for sort of petty thievery and, you know, was a homeless street kid. And then she ends up in Holloway Prison for most of World War II because she's suspected as being a racketeer, you know, because she fell in with a kind of South London mobster. So she's very much on a sort of path to redemption, but she sees society through a kind of, let's say, not contemporary gaze, because I've always wanted her to feel believably 1940s, but equally, you know, women were ahead of their time. And the fact that we've only got movies with women's point of view that went through the Hays Code filter, the motion picture code, would never really in the 40s get women telling their own stories. So I really just wanted to have a female detective, very edgy, very subversive. You know, I wanted a diverse community of characters, and I really wanted it populated with female characters on whether they're committing the crimes or just part of Elvira as well, because as women, we do have a lot of women in our lives. And noir is amazing for isolating women from each other, you know, with the exception of Mildred Pierce, I don't think there are many friendships for women. So I just wanted to write that book, as Toni Morrison said, that I wanted to read. I wanted to, yeah, it's a real passion project for me.
I wanted to just diverge slightly and talk about books that are written for a certain era and whether one should take them in context. So, for instance, the noir novels, but I'm also thinking here of people like, I don't know how we completely now reject, say, Rudyard Kipling, who was writing for his time, and various others who write things that are deeply politically incorrect now. Should we not be reading these books? Should we be making an attempt to update them? Should we be reading them with perhaps a kind of caveat emptor beforehand about context?
Well, I think it's a really good question. I mean, I watch a lot of movies, you know, on these channels that just sort of 24/7 show old movies, and a lot of them come out with warnings now that this might be offensive. And certainly Gone with the Wind has come under criticism, quite rightly, for its, you know, look at the Deep South in a racist gaze. And, you know, Mildred Pierce has horrendous stereotypes. I think, you know, history teaches us about prevailing ideologies of the time, doesn't it? So I think reading these books can help us step back and also but look at our own, because that's the whole point of history, learning from our mistakes and being able to question our values here and now. You know, it's not about totally cancelling them out, but it's about being, you know, maybe teaching, you know, younger readers to actually question values. The 40s in question is really interesting because people can be very nostalgic about it, you know, because obviously, you know, fascism was beaten. There was wartime spirit. There was great hardship. There was great loss of life, great sacrifice. So I think some people sort of in more traditional values, you know, it's harder for them to question some of the narratives of that era. I mean, a lot of Golden Age crime is, yeah, really offensive. And recently I've been reading David Niven's, one of his autobiographies, and I thought, God, you're really quite sexist, you know.
You know, it's shocking The Moon's Balloon is a very, very sexist book.
He's really a man's man, and he does these horrendous descriptions of women. Mm. And I think you're not doing that about the, you know, about the men. So I think, you know, it's about teaching readers to question from an early age. So I don't think they should go. No, I mean, I think everything is of its time and we should learn from it so that we can't escape scrutiny of our own times, because it's not exactly as if everything is equal now.
Yeah. Well, of course, you help people learn from it, because as well as your Elvira Slate series, you also wrote The Woman in the Story, and that teaches us how to do it. Tell us about that book.
Well, I mean, when I did my MA in screenwriting many years ago, I graduated, in 2001, I was quite aware that, you know, I'd come before that from a kind of, I'd been managing aid programs. So have been really aware of, you know, human rights, equality and that kind of work. But when I got to do my MA, which was a brilliant MA in so many respects for writing and developing my skills and confidence as a screenwriter, I was kind of aware that nothing on the curriculum actually addressed gender. And if you're a female character, you know, how we represent female characters, how we, you know, the choices we make in representing female characters, particularly at the time when certainly there weren't that many female characters in leading roles that we could arguably say were progressive. So I thought, well, I'd like to write a book that really helps writers like me feel confident and empowered to create the female characters they want to see that as yet aren't on screen very often, you know, older women, black women, you know, gay, lesbian characters, you know, trans women, you know, where are the stories for these kinds of characters? And not only that, but just sort of thinking about, you know, do they have to be likable? I mean, a lot of screenwriters I met and still to this day saying that when they show their scripts, you know, there's a real problem with, you know, is she likable? Which is not a question we will ever ask male leads, male protagonists, you know, because the anti-hero is, you know, there's a long tradition of the anti-hero and, you know, ambiguous morality in our male characters. It's been much more of a hard campaign to get female characters to where they are now. And there's still a long way to go, I think. So that's why I wrote the book. It's having its 10-year anniversary, so I'm celebrating.
But on top of that, what you also do then is mentor other people and work with them to make sure that actually their female characters are well-rounded, that they come across as real and that there is diversity.
Yeah, I do this in a variety of ways. I teach at Bournemouth University part-time on creative writing. So, you know, mentoring students is really important to me. Mentoring professional screenwriters equally has been a complete privilege. I mean, when the book came out, I was really in demand for consultation, and just the fact that I think because I had a writer's point of view and my model wasn't really theoretical, it was actually thinking about, you know, who you are as a writer, what do you want to say, what is your character actually helping you say what you want to say, and explore your themes. So I think because my approach was kind of refreshing for a lot of people, that sort of, you know, has been really helpful in the mentoring process. I think mentoring is a wonderful thing anyway, because I think we all need mentors at different stages of our lives. And I've just been absolutely blessed to be able to help people feel excited about their projects. I'm, you know, I suppose I read characters with quite a lot of psychological depth. And I think that's useful to writers as well. Sometimes having that outside point of view, someone else, I mean, everybody is always going to read your character differently. But sometimes, you know, being with a mentor who wants to understand and tries very hard to get you to think about what you want your character to be is essential.
Absolutely. So your first Alvira Slate was Jailbird Detective. Alvira Slate Investigates. And now there's Chipped Pearls. And you've got another one about to come out too.
Yeah, I'm busy writing the third one called Third Woman. So, yeah, I mean, I want it to be a 10-book series if I can. So that's, it's as I say, it's a passion project because I absolutely love getting immersed in Elvira's world. So, yeah, Jailbird Detective was, you know, it was probably bigger than it should be. I think I felt that, you know, I really wanted to tell a meaty story. And in a sense, it's her journey to becoming a private detective. It's her escape from, you know, jumping probation. So I'm really into the sort of long development of her arc as a character, because I'm interested in mental health as well. You don't get many male noir detectives self-reflecting and questioning themselves. I thought to myself, well, Elvira, she has suffered. I mean, she's been traumatized and abused through life. She's been incarcerated. She's got a lot of issues. Now, these issues actually help her become a detective because she can question motives and this outsider position. And these kinds of wounds help her actually paradoxically understand some of the motivations of the crimes that she's investigating. But I want her to have a long arc through the series of some kind of healing because she becomes a career woman. And I think, you know, that outsider, the sort of lost girl, becomes a kind of, you know, independent career woman who has her own startup effectively as a detective business. So back to mentoring, I've got a kind of older woman character mentor who's also a very experienced detective. So I think that that's a really important theme I like to explore through the novels, the kind of mother-daughter relationship and how women actually help each other rather than hinder each other.
Mm. You mentioned it being planned as a 10-book series and you're writing number 3 right now.
Yeah.
Do you know what's going to happen in 10? I mean, have you seen that far ahead or is it organically just developing as you go along?
Yeah, I kind of do. I'm a great believer in knowing your ending because that helps you shape the journey. If it's a feature film script or a TV pilot, I think, you know, I always say to writers, know your ending. So I do. I do know her ending. And I've also thought, oh God, wouldn't it be good to do something more contemporary about Elvira's granddaughter? No, but that's, I'm not going down that route. I'm very happy, you know, to be staying in the 40s and traveling with her. Each book covers a few months, so I'm not going to go hugely into different decades because I think I'm happy with the 40s. And I think it's, you know, it's good to have this kind of groundbreaking kind of character, as you will, showing new vistas and, you know, female readers, well, and some men actually really do seem to enjoy her and find her refreshing. And they're like, yes, she's wanted who I wanted to see. A friend of mine said, you know, it's like there's all these sort of sassy second part characters in a lot of noir films. They're not the femme fatales, but there's always this kind of sort of drifter, bad girl. She's not really bad because she's not out to destroy the protagonist, but they're a sort of bit of wayward female. And I think Elvira kind of, you know, they are her foremothers, if you like, these kinds of rather sort of what I call the grifter girls of Hollywood noir.
Mm. You also have a book on romantic comedy. What happens when Happy Ever After isn't quite so simple?
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, romantic comedy is a really fascinating genre. And I co-wrote that book with my good friend, Craig Bratty. And we decided we had this sort of passionate love of comedies, bizarrely enough, because I also, you know, I like genres. I like looking at what makes genre works. So again, this was a creative guide to help writers, you know, who are looking at romantic comedy. Because it's not girl meets boy, is it? It's everybody meets everybody these days. And happy endings, you know, sometimes it's not about, a lot of romantic comedies now are about what happens after. So we thought it was an important book to write and it was actually great fun writing it.
Absolutely. And I mean, in terms of romantic comedy, we tend to be quite sniffy about it these days, don't we? Just that it shouldn't always have to turn out that way. Is it possible to stay within that genre but bring it something refreshing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of independent romantic comedies, I don't know if you remember 500 Days of Summer. I mean, that had a kind of slightly neurotic female. I mean, it was a male-driven story, but it was very much about a young man who gets obsessed with a female character who ultimately looks a bit of a narcissist. I mean, I quite liked her, funnily enough. But, you know, he's got no self-esteem. And the whole point of this romantic comedy is that actually he needs to learn to love himself. And I think that's a good message in romantic comedies is actually, you know, you're only going to find the right partner when you really like yourself and you're not projecting a lot of unresolved wounds onto unsuitable people, which most of us have done growing up. You know, it's a rites of passage romance, you know, finding the right person doesn't happen overnight for most people. So I think this sort of, you know, the wounds of, you know, of growing up, of young adulthood, you know, think about dating in the time of COVID. I'm sure there's millions of romances being written now. love in the time of corona, I think that's the buzzword, isn't it?
Yes, I know. Yeah. How on earth people manage it, I have no idea. Helen, thank you so much for talking to us. And your books are all freely available now. Not freely available, people can buy them.
Yeah, they're available online in all the usual places and you can order them from bookshops. Thank you.
Yeah. And people shouldn't forget that, of course, there is a wonderful new initiative, bookshop.org, which brings together small independent bookshops. And we would urge people to try and buy through those shops rather than through very large global online retailers.
Yeah, fantastic.
Helen Jacey, thank you so much. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.